Good, I say. So, what's the schedule?
You'll each have 4 hours with Effie for presentation and 4 with me for content, says Haymitch. You start with Effie, Katniss.
I can't imagine what Effie will have to teach me that could take 4 hours, but she's got me working down to the last minute. We go to my room, and she puts me in a full-length gown and high-heeled shoes, not the ones I'll be wearing for the actual interview, and instructs me on walking. The shoes are the worst part. I've never worn high heels and can't get used to essentially wobbling around on the balls of my feet. But Effie runs around in them full time, and I'm determined that if she can do it, so can I. The dress poses another problem. It keeps tangling around my shoes, so of course I hitch it up, and then Effie swoops down on me like a hawk, smacking my hands and yelling, "Not above the ankle!" When I finally conquer walking, they're still sitting. Posture. Apparently I have a tendency to duck my head. Eye contact, hand gestures, and smiling. Smiling is mostly about smiling more. Effie makes me say 100 banal phrases starting with a smile, while smiling, or ending with a smile. By lunch, the muscles in my cheeks are twitching from overuse.
"Well, that's the best I can do," Effie says with a sigh.
"Just remember, Katniss, you want the audience to like you." "And you don't think they will?" I ask.
"Not if you glare at them the entire time. Why don't you save that for the arena? Instead, think of yourself among friends," says Effie.
"They're betting on how long I'll live," I burst out. "They're not my friends."
"Well, try and pretend,"
snaps Effie. Then she composes herself and beams at me.
"See? Like this. I'm smiling at you even though you're aggravating me."
"Yes, it feels very convincing," I say. "I'm going to eat." I kick off my heels and stomp down to the dining room, hiking my skirt up to my thighs. Peeta and Haymitch seem to be in pretty good moods, so I'm thinking the content session should be an improvement over the morning. I couldn't be more wrong. After lunch, Haymitch takes me into the sitting room, directs me to the couch, and then just frowns at me for a while.
"What?"
I finally ask.
"I'm trying to figure out what to do with you," he says. "How we're gonna present you. Are you gonna be charming, aloof, fierce? So far, you're shining like a star. You volunteered to save your sister. Cinna made you look unforgettable. You've got the top training score. People are intrigued, but no one knows who you are. The impression you make tomorrow will decide exactly what I can get you in terms of sponsors," says Haymitch.
Having watched the Tribune interviews all my life, I know there's truth to what he's saying. If you appeal to the crowd, either by being humorous or brutal or eccentric, you gain favor. "What's Peeta's approach? Or am I not allowed to ask?" I say.
"Likeable. He has a sort of self-deprecating humor naturally," says Haymitch. "Whereas when you open your mouth, you come across more as sullen and hostile."
"I do not," I say.
"Please, I don't know where you pulled that cheery, wavy girl on the chariot from, but I haven't seen her before or since," says Haymitch.
"And you've given me so many reasons to be cheery," I counter.
"But you don't have to please me. I'm not going to sponsor you, so pretend I'm the audience," says Haymitch. "Delight me."
"Fine," I snarl. Haymitch takes the role of the interviewer, and I try to answer his questions in a winning fashion, but I can't. I'm too angry with Haymitch for what he said and that I even have to answer the questions. All I can think is how unjust the whole thing is, the Hunger Games. Why am I hopping around like some trained dog trying to please people I hate? The longer the interview goes on, the more my fury seems to rise to the surface until I'm literally spitting out answers at him.
"All right, enough," he says. "We gotta find another angle. Not only are you hostile, I don't know anything about you. I've asked you 50 questions and still have no sense of your life, your family, what you care about. They want to know about you, Katniss. But I don't want them to. They're already taking my future. They can't have the things that mattered to me in the past, I say.
Then lie. Make something up, says Haymitch.
I'm not good at lying, I say.
Well, you better learn fast. You've got about as much charm as a dead slug, says Haymitch.
Ouch. That hurts. Even Haymitch must know he's been too harsh because his voice softens.
Here's an idea. Try acting humble.
Humble, I echo.
That you can't believe a little girl from District 12 has done this well. The whole thing's been more than you ever could have dreamed of. Talk about Senna's clothes, how nice the people are, how the city amazes you. If you won't talk about yourself, at least compliment the audience. Just keep turning it back around, all right? Gush.
The next hours are agonizing. At once, it's clear I cannot gush. We try me playing cocky, but I just don't have the arrogance. Apparently, I'm too vulnerable for ferocity. I'm not witty, funny, sexy, or mysterious. By the end of the session, I am no one at all. Haymitch started drinking somewhere around witty, and a nasty edge has crept into his voice.
I give up, sweetheart. Just answer the questions and try not to let the audience see how openly you despise them.
I have dinner that night in my room, ordering an outrageous number of delicacies, eating myself sick, and then taking out my anger at Haymitch, at the Hunger Games, at every living being in the Capitol by smashing dishes around my room. When the girl with the red hair comes in to turn down my bed, her eyes widen at the mess. Just leave it, I yell at her. Just leave it alone. I hate her too, with her knowing, reproachful eyes that call me a coward, a monster, a puppet of the Capitol, both now and then. For her, justice must finally be happening. At least my death will help pay for the life of the boy in the woods. But instead of fleeing the room, the girl closes the door behind her and goes to the bathroom. She comes back with a damp cloth and wipes my face gently, then cleans the blood from a broken plate off my hands. Why is she doing this? Why am I letting her? I should have tried to save you, I whisper. She shakes her head. Does this mean we were right to stand by? That she has forgiven me? No, it was wrong, I say. She taps her lips with her fingers, then points to my chest. I think she means that I would just have ended up in AVOX, too. Probably would have. An AVOX or dead. I spend the next hour helping the redheaded girl clean the room. When all the garbage has been dropped down a disposal and the food cleaned away, she turns down my bed. I crawl in between the sheets like a 5-year-old and let her tuck me in. Then she goes. I want her to stay until I fall asleep. To be there when I wake up. I want the protection of this girl, even though she never had mine. In the morning, it's not the girl, but my prep team who are hanging over me. My lessons with Effie and Haymitch are over. This day belongs to Senna. He's my last hope. Maybe he can make me look so wonderful no one will care what comes out of my mouth. The team works on me until late afternoon, turning my skin to glowing satin, stenciling patterns on my arms, painting flame designs on my 20 perfect nails. Then Venia goes to work on my hair, weaving strands of red into a pattern that begins at my left ear, wraps around my head, and then falls in one braid down my right shoulder. They erase my face with a layer of pale makeup and draw my features back out. Huge dark eyes, full red lips, lashes that throw off bits of light when I blink. Finally, they cover my entire body in a powder that makes me shimmer in gold dust. Then Senna enters with what I assume is my dress, but I can't really see it because it's covered.
Close your eyes, he orders.
I can feel the silken inside as they slip it down over my naked body. Then the weight. It must be 40 pounds.
I clutch Octavia's hand as I blindly step into my shoes, glad to find they're at least 2 inches lower than the pair Effie had me practice in. There's some adjusting and fidgeting, then silence.